Let's take our seats so that we can continue with our meeting and get reports. During break, I was just going through my Twitter handle, and I see that University of Limpopo is trending there. They approached court on an urgent basis, and they lost that case to stop ENCA checkpoint from flighting some program about some degree, which is seemed to be a bit fictitious. So that just shows you how hectic is the sector that we are in, all of us. I don't know whether you are following it on behalf of the vice chancellors. Yusuf. But yeah, things are happening. I was even saying that the way things are happening so quick and fast in the sector, we might have to be also be very proactive. Where things are happening, we might have to call them here, or we might have to visit them. Visiting is an issue because we're only allowed to go out when it's oversight week. So we might have to call everybody where things are happening and find out what exactly is the issue. Mm-hmm. All the stakeholders, including the students and management, so that we are able to get to arrest this situation. I know the department's mandate is to deal with these things, but we also exist here. Maybe we must put into practice the concept of an activist parliament. To use. So, you are ready, Administrator?
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson, and I really welcome the very constructive inputs that we receive from the committee. We will, of course, it's quite detailed responses in some cases required, and we will provide that detail. So what I intend to do is to address the cross-cutting issues, and if there is anything I left out, of course, I'll come back to it. But I also would like to give the department an opportunity to respond to especially some of the policy issues that were raised. So I'll be – then first let me start off with a few issues that will assist the debate. So the application
Okay. Maybe just to interrupt you a little bit, my apologies.
Yeah.
Honorable Noda has indicated he's going to leave. So I don't know, he has asked a number of questions. So maybe if we can start with responding to him from your side and whoever is coming. It's a courtesy from the chair, Honorable Noda. You are not entitled to that. Tomorrow I will do it to Honorable Kiese, to Honorable Boshoff. Okay, so yeah, proceed, and whoever is going to come, maybe just prioritize not others' questions.
So thanks. I'll just the few issues that I wanted to make quick input to that will assist the debate. The issue of the application procedure, you don't apply every year. You apply once, and you are let into the system. It's only when you fail that you have to then appeal. So NSFAS underwrites you for the duration of the course that you apply for, and therefore you don't apply every year. The ones that appeal are the ones that fail or don't meet the requirements to proceed. That's the continuing students appeal process that's handled by the university and at which we get the advice from the universities. We are happy to say we have joined the fourth revolution. You can do electronic signature. The issues where we can't find NBAs is where it's a manual process. So by far, most of our students sign electronically online their NBAs. Also, we don't have to do work with SASA. We are already integrated with SASA. So we pick up automatically with your SASA student. Where there is an issue sometimes is when we have to update the SASSA by database. You know, when we say this is a SASSA recipient and it doesn't appear on their database, then there is some debate around it. Quickly, the issue about the pre-funded students. These are students that are other students than DHET. So this would be the FUNSA students. This would be students from the CETAS. This would be some private institutions. Now, one of the difficulties that we have with that is that those funders select their own students, and then we are dependent on their progress with selection, and then we can fund. And that's why there's a delay with funding of FUNSA students, because we only get the list from DBE, say in March or April sometimes. We have engaged them and said this caused enormous administrative problems and that they must do the selection earlier. And secondly, more importantly, is that they must standardize the allowances to meet and match the DHET allowances, because that also creates problems. You know, if they don't fund in concert or in the same to the same degree as the DHET. So let me deal with the honorable member that's about to leave. I'm looking through my notes. Is the current funding model sustainable? And that's a very important question going forward. And I would say that I've got my own opinions, and we've actually done our own research. But that's going to be part of the redesign of the NISFAS model going forward, with the ministerial team that the terms of reference have just been submitted to the minister. So that issue, together with the issue of regional offices, together with the issue of fee-free education, the social context in which NISFAS funds itself, all of that, I would imagine, will be taken up in the interministerial committee. Now, that does not mean that NISFAS do not have strong views on some of these things, and we have developed some views on that. So if you ask me straight, is the current sustainable? Yes, it is sustainable. It must just be properly administered, and so that the throughput rate of students can be improved by not having to worry about NISFAS funding. It must become a seamless flow of funds from the government to the students. The question of sustainability will definitely come up if you decide then to extend it, to make it fee-free, and that depends on the government's fiscus. But in many other societies where transformation had to take place, the only way you're going to achieve parity, remove inequality, remove poverty, is through education. There is no other way. That's my personal experience, and that's also the issue that I submit. So any government that wants to change the shape and nature and transform society will have to invest in its young people, because poverty is not equal to degree of intelligence. If you give everybody an opportunity, we're going to change the society, and I speak from personal experience on this. What funds did NISFAS put to VBS? In 2017, NISFAS issued a tender for the design of what's known as electronic wallet to issue to students, where they can get different amounts in different wallets. And the two banks that won the tender was VBS and Standard Bank. Following the VBS...
What was that, 2017?
Yeah. Then when VBS was placed under curatorship, the contract was then cancelled with VBS. So I was looking through my presentation to see where I referred to VBS, but that's the only association that I can recall that we had with VBS. So it was cancelled, and then when I arrived as administrator, I engaged Standard Bank also and said that this tender was not handled properly, and we agreed that we cancelled that part of the contract as well, the design of the NISFAS wallet to students. Now, you raised a very important point, and it's also something that we need to take note of. When we designed the 2019 funding model, we rated institutions and attached a risk profile to each institution as to the ability to with which they can disperse funds. And at that stage, three or four colleges indicated that they won't be able to. They don't have the capacity. So we then designed what is known as the NISFAS wallet to pay directly to those students. In some cases, we actually had to pay directly into students' accounts. So initially, we started with three colleges. Subsequent to that, 26. It grew to 26 colleges. So we disbursed to 26 colleges directly from NISFAS. The other 24 still disbursed through the college system. That's why there are these two systems. In 2020, we intend to align those two systems and have a direct disbursement to banks, to bank accounts of students. The reason why we left it for 2020 is because there's a lot of planning that must go in. Students must be encouraged to open bank accounts and a whole host of things. And hopefully, if we get that right, it will solve a lot of the TVET-related problems with regards to disbursement. we have, or we believe we can do it. We were tempted to go in September. I stopped it because I said this will be properly piloted and properly delivered on. The delay regarding exam results, in the past, NISFAS, TVET colleges submit their results to the department, where after the department do the validations and then transfer to NISFAS. And that was a delayed process. And so now to mitigate against that, whilst we set up the systems, we take the results directly from colleges so that we can expedite the processing of the processing of students. Are the issues? Oh, the issue of the middleman. I will talk to that. We have removed all commercial interest from the disbursement value chain, because we say you cannot market on the back of a NISFAS value chain. If you want to market, market to the students themselves, not to us. So we have moved towards exiting all these commercial interests. The issue of the bank still being there and the issue of the post bank, that is certainly a debate that we have internally and internally with DHET as to where do we put government funds, and that's a debate that will continue and you will be kept abreast. Just quickly, because the TVET came out so many times, issue of TVET administration. So we are establishing an internal TVET branch within NISFAS. We've got the business plan, we've got the funding requirements for that, and we have identified the strategy and organogram and all that. We can share that with you. This lady is currently driving that whole process to make sure that TVETs get the dedicated attention and not being treated as second cousins or second-hand citizens in the system. And at the moment as we speak, one of our head of IT is attending a conference with the TVET IT heads to see how we can better integrate our systems for 2020 going forward. And certainly the report I just got now from my colleague here from UCT is that it is actually going very well. We have insourced our internal audit capacity. It was previously done by Ernst & Young, so it's now a competency of NISFAS. And like I said earlier, we are going to be auditing all institutions on a three-year cycle. And we have prioritized certain institutions. And based on some of the inputs we received here today, we will certainly prioritize the one particular college that was mentioned. My colleague had just pointed out that the problem had been resolved while we were sitting here, and so the students are getting their money. But we had to engage the management to make sure the money gets released. Just quickly, and I'll wrap up with this. Two more issues. The forensics, how many are arrested? Two people have been charged, a third person will be charged, and we have just received another charge sheet for a person in Port Elizabeth. So already four people have been charged. We expect the rest to escalate as we conclude our forensics. And it is based on prima facie evidence. We didn't just jump straight into the forensics. We first did our own testing and said something's definitely wrong here, and the forensics are confirming that, and we are busy with some serious stuff. And I think the process to engage Parliament, it's the prerogative of the Minister to decide how he's going to do that. We will advise him about our presentation here today, and we will advise him what, how to take it forward. But certainly I don't think it's in anybody's interest to cover up for anybody or to make sure that people go scot-free, because this is, I think it's a bigger sin to steal from the poor than just to steal. I mean, it's still a sin, but I mean, it's just a bigger sin for me to steal from the poor. And I think Yala's got a special place for those people. On the issue of historic debt, 900 million rand was allocated by the minister. We supplement that with another 700 million rand, so the total pool for historic debt is 1.6 billion. And the supplementation came from stuff, from funds that were set aside for sorting our debt in 2013 and 14 or 15. So we moved this we got permission to move it to this port. We have issued the criteria to all institutions as to who qualifies for the settling of this historic debt to make sure that students can graduate and exit the system and become productive economic citizens. We have received the submissions. Many institutions didn't follow the rules and the guidelines, and we sent it back after we did our quality control. And we are pushing them hard to finish that quality control and resubmit us with the data. So of all the submissions we received, we were only able to process 10% of that, and we are hoping that we can conclude that as soon as possible, because the longer we wait, the longer the students are going to be out of pocket and the system being unstable. So if I skip over any other questions that I need answering, I think I'll ask my colleagues from DHET to address the policy issues, and then I look while they're busy with that whether there's any other important issues that I left out. But I think DHET permission, with your permission, Chair, should come on board at this stage, because there are pertinent policy issues that were raised that I think require attention before we run out of time.
Okay, Department, DDG, the Princess of Wales, in the house.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, thank you very much. There were a number of policy issues that were raised, and I think it's very important to understand the context in which these policy issues come about. You will recall that the former president made an announcement on the 16th of December 2017 that a new fund would be made available to support, and I think the words he used was fully subsidized free higher education and training, something like that, for poor and working class students. So there are a number of words in there, and coming to understand what that really meant and how the funding was made available in terms of the amount from the fiscus is a really important aspect of this whole process and how the policy evolved. Firstly, the free part was very specifically around tuition, free tuition. And that meant that for university education, any students coming in as first-time entry students into the system would get free tuition for whatever it was that they were doing, but it was going to be phased in over 5 years. So it would have been a period of each first-time entry group of students being fully funded for tuition. For TVET colleges, it was right up front that all of the students who qualified would be funded for tuition and learning support materials, because the learning support materials are provided as part of the coursework for TVET colleges. So it's different between how learning support materials are provided for TVET as to how they're provided for universities. The subsidized part for universities was specifically around the various allowances, the learning support materials, the book allowances, and then meal allowances and living allowances and accommodation or transport. And within that amount of funds that were made available, it had to take into account the different circumstances of different poor and working class students that might be part of this overall policy decision. So When we look at that, we start to understand some of the differences in the allowances that were made available through the policy decision. We had a very short term as government and the university, USAF, the SACPA and NISFAS, to deal with some of the policy issues around how these things would be implemented. It was a very short time. In fact, we met on the 17th of December after the announcement to quickly think through some of these issues, understanding how National Treasury had worked out the funding that was available. One of the key principles that was underpinning the funding allowances that were made, or the funding that was made available, was the idea that we had estimated a certain number of students or percentage of students in the TVETs and in the universities would be funded. The second issue would be that there was an expectation that students in contact institutions could be funded for accommodation. meals, etc., but those who were in distance education would not be, because the principle behind distance education is that you study at a distance. So there's no expectation you should be coming to a campus, you should have transport, you should have meal allowances or accommodation. So if we were to, for example, the NISFAS issue that SAS brought up, not NISFAS, UNISA issue that was brought up, if we were to fund all UNISA students, it would have enormous fiscal implications because, you know, if you were going to have them funded as if they were contact students when they are at a distance education institution, it would be huge. So that is one area one has to understand in thinking about the policy implications of the decision. The second thing was that there had to be a process around how did we work out how these funds would be allocated for their different subsidies. And we understood there would be a subsidy for books, a subsidy for what we eventually have called a living allowance, which includes both a meal allowance plus a personal care allowance, if you want to put it that way. So the issue of the sanitary towels, etc., is covered within the personal the personal incidental allowance, and all students who are given this FAS allocation get that, including the UNISA students who are on full-time, receive that. The second thing is, and perhaps one of the things that have come out of FAS is something we need to think about in the policy discussion, is whether or not male and female students should get the same amount for this particular allowance. It may be that female students should get more than male students, but it's something we'll have to discuss in the policy work that we're doing going forward. The second thing was about who should get accommodation. And this really is a big issue because accommodation is incredibly expensive and it was subsidized accommodation. So the idea was that we should be able to fund students for the kind of accommodation that would be available through a university, but that there may be other forms of accommodation available for students who live far away from a campus. Now, for the TVET space, and I'll ask my colleague from TVET maybe to come in if necessary, but in the TVET space, there was a decision to work towards standardized allowances for accommodation depending on where the student lived, whether it was urban, rural, and how far away from a specific campus. Understanding that TVET campuses are across the entire system. We have TVETs in all sorts of different districts, etc., which is different from universities because universities, there are only 26 universities in the country. So it's expected that far more students will come to university from afar than in terms of the TVET colleges. So when we think about this accommodation issue, we had to make some decisions, and one of the decisions that was made was that the policy would be that students who lived at home within a 30-kilometer radius, more or less, of the campus they were studying at would not get accommodation allowance. They were living at home. They were supported at home, and therefore they wouldn't either get a meal allowances. It was expected they would be supported through other social development processes if they were poor students, for example, what comes from the Department of Social Development, but that they would get a transport allowance. So now some of the confusion and difficulty that's happened, and it was a major issue for us in the department, for NISFAS, for students, for universities, was that not all university campuses are the same, and not all conditions are the same. And there, you know, is insufficient overall student housing for all students. So there was an agreement that students who were coming from afar but having to rent outside of a university campus would be able to get a rental agreement and then still get a subsidy from the FAS. And so that is in place. It's not that students who are living off campus don't get that subsidy. They do. But we have to, as we go through the policy refinement process, because we all recognize we need a very stable policy environment around this. We have to come up with a revision of this current policy, which really does deal with all the different problems that we've identified over this implementation in 2018 and 2019, some of which I think the students very aptly described. We are in a process at the moment, together with all the stakeholders, working out what some of those policy decisions need to be, and that will be discussed and go through a full process with all the stakeholders, the universities, and I'm thinking from the TVET side, the TVET colleges, NSFAS, all the student bodies, etc., so that we all end up with a full understanding before the end of this year of what the new policy guidelines are and how we will be implementing them. There are going to be some very tough decisions that will have to be made because there's limited funding in the fiscus. We might want to do all kinds of things in the ideal world, which we all would agree with in principle, but we have to work within the real world, which is a country which is under an enormous fiscal crunch at the moment, and we have limited funding that has been made available. So we will work with that. It comes to this issue of the 350 benchmark as well. That's what the policy is at the moment. I can't see that changing. We are not talking about free education for all here, but we have made huge strides. I mean, as the NSFAS administrator indicated, we're funding around about 45% of the university students in the system, and we're also funding a large number of the TVET students in the system. I'm not sure the exact amount there. But what we really need is a stable policy environment, and the policy has to be fair, it has to be rational, it has to be implementable, and it needs to be affordable. So all of those things have to be balanced together as we come up with this final policy. We recognize that we may not be able to get a policy that goes through all the sort of gazetting processes, but it will probably be a refinement of the current guidelines. But I think we all committed collectively to ensure that we get this out before the end of this academic year, so that there's absolute certainty in everybody's mind and that we can have proper engagements with students so that when they come, they know what they can expect and what kind of support they might be able to get. So I think that's where we are in relation to the policy process. And I think we have to understand that, you know, in terms of the overall fiscal issue. And that comes to this question about sustainability. Is this sustainable? Well, it is sustainable if we get a policy that meets all those criteria. It's sustainable. Government has made commitments. We have received funding through the vote. It's in the baseline. We will be able to support the students as long as we think through the growth of the system in a rational way, and we ensure that we fund accordingly. So I think that's our view, that it will be sustainable as long as we meet all those criteria. However, and perhaps Honourable Hetsy, we'll have to come to your question about can we afford to just give it to everybody? No, I don't think that's going to be possible because that will be unaffordable. We have to understand that we live in a country where we are going to have to deal with some of those very hard choices. And if we're really talking about ensuring that we change the possibility of students who are coming from poor and working class student households, then we need to focus on those students to ensure change in life for them, who really are the majority of our young people. So I think that's important. The other aspect of this, and it links to the questions that, and I've forgotten who actually spoke about it, but this issue of student success and the support that NSFAS will give to ensure success of students. We are confident that this will become something that we'll see growing. already our cohort studies, which we do every year, and Honourable Chair, you may want to get a copy of our cohort study report for universities. We do a cohort studies every year where we follow different groups of students across the system. And what the cohort studies are showing is that students who have been funded by NSFAS, even in the old system, when they weren't fully funded, where they didn't get sufficient funding for accommodation or for food, they're doing better than the general students in the system. And the throughput rate of NSFAS-funded university students in contact institutions is around about 64%, whereas the throughput rate for students in the general population in universities is about 54%. That's a 10% greater throughput for students who were funded through NSFAS. Now, these are students from economically disadvantaged homes, so I think that is a proof that the funding that is going to NSFAS is a good investment for the country, and what we're wanting to see is improvement on that as we get better and better funding to ensure students are effectively supported. So I think that's an important issue. And just in terms of this final issue around the policy, there are many longer term issues that we're going to have to deal with in relation to the policy, as well as the NSFAS operations. The minister, you will know, had announced in his budget vote speech that he will be doing a review of NSFAS, and he'll put in place a little team to do that. And we're working with the administrator in terms of putting together the terms of reference for that at the moment, so that we can have a review of all of these things to really understand what we can do in the long term to ensure that we have a NSFAS that is able to do its core business, which we recognize is to fund poor and working class students. That's what its business is. Let's get the money to the students who need to get the money. Let's ensure that their fees are paid, and let's ensure that they're effectively supported to succeed. I think that's most of the policy issues that we dealt with. But one of the critical aspects linked into this is how we all work together. We have to understand that we are busy creating a student funding ecosystem for the system. And that involves NSFAS as a central body that disburses funds. It involves the institutions, the universities and the TVET colleges, and it involves the department from in terms of our remits. And we all have to work together to ensure that this thing is well managed and that students are effectively supported.
Thank you very much, Princess of Wales. Can we get, just summarize the responses? I think we've had you on that. Were you done?
Perhaps just one point which I think came out a few times which I neglect to address is the issue of staff. So the temptation is to fix the systems and leave the staff behind. And we have recognized that to be a big omission. At the moment, NSFAS is not properly balanced. It's got way too many senior managers and way too few technical people. And so part of that is to rebalance the organization to make sure that we have the necessary technical capacity. At the moment, I have to consult people in to fulfill that role of IT and data architecturing and reconciliation. And those people need to be taken up into the permanent positions into NSFAS. The whole issue about the social mandate of NSFAS, we talk to staff all the time about the importance of them serving the country. The staff have been terribly hurt, and they've been abused. And so it is going to be investing quite a bit of change management to bring them on board. But I'm happy to see that as we open up opportunities for internal staff, especially younger people, where we provide them with opportunities to go up the career ladder, that they are responding magnificently. There are, unfortunately, still a number of bad apples in the system which we need to deal with. But we do have prioritized staff development as an important key success factor for NSFAS going forward. I'll stop to give my other colleagues an opportunity to to also present.
It's just 1 second, Chairperson. Okay. I just wanted to get in terms of what you mentioned around VBS, that it was against the PFMA. Has anybody been held accountable for that?
At the moment, that's all part of our entire review of decisions previously made. That's one of the aspects that we will be looking at as to how certain decisions were made in the past. There's a number of other issues as well also. But
did you lose any money out of
that? No, nothing.
Okay. Okay, who else is going to respond? Okay. The principals of TVET.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I indicated that I wish to respond to the allegation made by the leader of students about principals who are low and to themselves. I think first and foremost, I must indicate that SACPO is an organization of professionals and law-abiding people. So we do not harbor any thugs or people who are low unto themselves or dictators. When matters are brought to us and there are specifics, we deal with them. Unfortunately, one is hearing this for the first time, but I promise student leaders that we have to engage out of this meeting so that we get specifics of the matters he's raising. But as SACPO, we distance ourselves from such individuals who are behaving like dictators or like Deputy Jesus. We are really not close to that, but we'll deal with that. I hope these are the issues that can be dealt with outside this meeting. I'm sure we'll fix it.
Also, you have not heard of that?
I've not heard of it, and we really do not support it. And
all right, let them give you the details, and then...
Yes, we'll attend to it.
Okay.
And including the issues of students getting 120 rand instead of 9,000, I heard something of that nature. That I think even NSFAS should attend to this, because as much as SACPO is there as an organization to support principals, but issues of these are criminal issues that need to be attended to and be given such a respect. But as unfortunately the absence of the leadership of SAFESA at the moment, but we are happy that there is conference coming up so that we continuously engage on such matters. We have improved our communication with all stakeholders in terms of issues that affect all of us, and we are doing very well on that. But SAFESA, once they are up again on their feet, we will definitely include them so that we improve communication. He also mentioned that he's happy that we are now on the ground. Of course, I was elected in this position in February this year. There was previous leadership that I can't account for. But I must tell you, Chairperson, as we are here, so that when we met, we are not surprised that there are colleges that are on strike as we speak. In Eastern Cape, East Cape, Midlands, and as well as King Hintz are on strike. In Free State, Goldfields is on strike. In KZN, follows and Mnambithi are on strike. Fortunately, in Limpopo, there is nothing. In Mpumalanga, Sibande and Kangala, they are on strike. In Northern Cape, Eben is on strike. In Western Cape, fortunately, there are no incidents reported. But in Gauteng, Tswane North, all campuses are shut down. They are on strike. So this is the current information that is happening as we speak. But I hope, as the administrator indicated, that they've started to pay, because these are related to that. Most of our strikes are related to NSFAS payments. Chairperson, the issue of the curriculum, our curriculum is divided into two.
Leave the curriculum.
Okay.
Yeah, so what we'll do, we will invite you next week.
Okay.
To come, because we've said to the department they must prepare a presentation on governance, management, the profile of the TVET, infrastructure issues, and the curriculum.
Okay.
So we're thinking of inviting you to come back.
No, it's okay, Chairperson.
Yeah, to talk to the curriculum and the management from your own perspective.
Okay.
And then the committee will engage with that.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think lastly, I'll be failing my duty not to congratulate NSFAS on three achievements that are very important in the sector. The first one is standardization of allowances. that has happened this year, and it has calmed down the situation a lot. And secondly, the introduction of a personal care allowance, which is definitely assisting, I think, what the President of South was raising in terms of sanitary towels. It can build on that because they've already started to pay that. And lastly, the introduction of NSFAS wallet, where they are paying students directly. Those 26 colleges where they are paying directly are much stable than those that are not paid directly because there is no middle person who is facilitating the payment of this payment. I just wanted to do that, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Okay. So the invitation is also extended to SAFESA for next week. Okay. What is it? Yusuf.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not a Vice-Chancellor, but I've been tasked to speak on behalf of Yusuf in relation to the issues that committee members have raised. I think, Chair, it's always a difficult task trying to present a national picture without singling any specific universities. So the Chair's point about the presentation lacking in many respects is duly noted, but it's trying to present a national overview because if there are specific university issues, it becomes problematic if one is singled out and it's not here to provide further insight into some of those issues. So that has always been USAF's challenge, but the message will certainly go back to the Vice-Chancellors that they need to do more in terms of the information that comes to this committee, Chair. Number two, Chair, the issue that has been raised in relation to communication, I think NSFAS has improved a great deal. I think what Yusuf was saying is that there's still room for improvement. And one of the issues that was singled out was in relation to preparations for 2020. But we're glad that the administrator has shared with the committee as well as the sector some of the plans that have been placed for opening up the administration process for 2020. In relation to, there was a question about what USAF is doing to help students, particularly those that haven't signed the agreements. This has a serious impact on the finances of universities. So universities in particular, where it's possible, are trying to assist. If you take the historic debt as an example, some where students were on campus, it's relatively easy. You can even go to their campuses. You can target them in certain classes to try to get them to sign the agreement. Where the challenge is when the student is off campus, as the student has left and exited the system. Some universities did appoint service providers to chase after those students, because if you get the students to sign, you get NSFAS to pay you, and therefore it benefits not only the students but also the institution. So I think, Chairperson, the challenge has always been those students that are off campus. The IT challenges, Chair, the administrator spoke briefly about it. We had a presentation yesterday with the IT Directors Forum in East London. And NSFAS came and made a very detailed presentation about some of the challenges, particularly relating to the data quality that they've received from the institution. But what was key about that presentation is that it gave you an aggregated view, and then it also disaggregated it to a specific institution. Therefore, it becomes quite easy to say Institution X. When you look at the average, you're way below the average. There are some challenges. And therefore, you can engage with the relevant stakeholders to try to address that. So I think this is one remarkable success that has happened, I think, with NSFAS, that as they improve in their IT systems, they're able to pinpoint some of the challenges, and then we can go to source and try to address it. I think one has to admit that in some instances, the problem could be the data from source. So we're happy with the developments over the last over the recent months that has been done in relation to improving NSFAS data. We're happy that the system is not failing almost on a nightly basis, and we appreciate that. But I think it needs to be also taken into account that the issue of cybersecurity, it's not just about cybersecurity, it's also about information technology and data breaches. It's quite important, and I think that's where the sector would expect NSFAS to make sure that they improve, because if there are any data breaches, it could have serious implications, not only for NSFAS, but for the institutions. We're dealing with people's personal data, and we need to make sure that that is addressed. The departments, in terms of the what the Vice Chancellor Mutua mentioned in relation to some students dropping out about after they get in the allowance, I think the department is best placed to do a cohort analysis in relation to that. Dr. Parker has mentioned that they do detailed cohort analysis, and they're able to track to the system. We appreciate what SARS has done. In fact, we had even shared with them that when they wrote to UCT that we've always been paying cash allowances, and we're able to see the performance of those students vis-a-vis non-NSFAS students. So it would be important, perhaps this is something that is taken up by the department, because you don't want to reinvent the wheel. And the department is in a better position than any USAF or even SAUS, because in most cases they deal with audited data. One cannot emphasize the importance of using audited data. Chairperson, the last part...
Okay, you must wrap up. Yeah?
Yes. Chairperson, the last part was that in relation to... I think these are other policy issues, Chair, that I think will be best placed by, answered by the department. But, Chair, I think in closing, what I'd like to say is that there has been remarkable improvement, both from a NSFAS as well as from a USAF point of view in terms of the level of engagement and also the development. We just want to make sure that the administrator focuses on building a team that will make sure that those developments will be sustainable. The sector, given some of the challenges that we faced over the last years, we need a very stable NSFAS. NSFAS is a very important enabler, not only for institutions. I know the emphasis has been on institutions, but also for universities, because if NSFAS says, we confirm the students, you know that whether the money comes today or next month, it's money in the bank, and that is important. But, Chair, the last point was raised in relation to the challenges about how we deal with some of the NSFAS students, which where their decision is still pending. I think it becomes a big risk for your university to some, we do advance funding to students if NSFAS is able to confirm that the students will be funded even before the money comes through. But there will always be a challenge that until you get the necessary confirmation, if you don't have the resources, and the volumes are quite huge, an institution would not want to underwrite that. So it becomes a challenge for some of the universities to try to underwrite where a student has not been confirmed. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you very much. do we still have outstanding comments? So we are done. I think the students have made their point. Through the leadership of SAUS and you want to say something?
Please, Chairperson, because I think I also failed to represent SACPO in terms of the interdicts. There was an issue around the interdicts. I think, Chairperson, I must indicate that unfortunately our society and our communities are faced with the protests that are violent. And the principal found himself to have to protect innocent people so that they don't get harmed. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the strikes, the protests that are taking place are also destroying property of the college, of the staff, and at times it puts the lives of students in danger. And principals are calling police, and police are not helping to an extent when they find that the only thing that can help is to apply for interdict, so that they stop this violence that is continuing. So many colleges are happening to go and sort for interdict just to control. Otherwise, if they are not doing that, the entire college can burn down. So, but we will investigate in situations where principals are abusing the interdicts to intimidate students. But most of the colleges in the country are seated with interdict because of the violence and the destruction that is coming with the student protests. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think you had closed the issue properly by saying you don't have details. Now you want to open up a can of worms by coming with a justification for something that you don't know. I think it was best left where you said you don't have information. You'll go back, you'll communicate with the leadership of SAFESA, and then you can be able to respond to the specifics. I don't like these general points, you know, because we're not dealing with the generals, we're dealing with the specifics. So, I think honorable members, we are fine. We had our own engagements. We've received the responses. We might still have issues, but of course that is the nature of us as members of parliament. Mm. We've got views around certain issues. We've got positions. Some of them may be party positions. So the responses are not going to satisfy all of us, but at least that's how, and as far as the department, everybody has responded to the issues. These are ongoing discussions. But what is important, I think the issue here is about stabilizing the system of funding of higher education, university students who are in universities, students who are in TVET colleges. They must receive funding. The state has made a commitment that all poor people in this country must have access to higher education through the system that has been administered by NSFAS. So what is of interest to us is to make sure that this system stabilizes, it does what it's supposed to do, and that's why we still commend what the administrator is doing. It will be important for that committee of inquiry of the minister to be established, because some of the questions that are raised here relate to the fundamentals about funding of higher education, sustainability, what models, and all of that. So those are big policy issues that may have to be resolved through that committee of inquiry. it may not be resolved by NSFAS. So I think what we need to get the next time we engage is what are the timelines on the establishment of that committee of inquiry. When is the minister going to sign the terms of reference? When is the advert going to go out to call for people to submit? Or whatever process that may be, whether the minister is just going to approach those who are supposed to serve in that panel, or is going to be an open process where people are going to be invited to submit. So we need to get that information so that we know when is this process going to commence, because all the players in the sector will have to make some submissions about what needs to be done. So, Dr. Parker, if we can just at the next opportunity, please provide us with clarification together with the minister. When are we expecting this process to unfold, and how long are we giving this process? Because the country needs to know what are we saying as a country towards all these big questions that are facing us, funding in particular of post-school education. I think we're fine, members. Can we please adjourn now? Can we please adjourn? You have got a serious appetite to engage. I see honorable member is still wanting to contribute. Honorable Gates.
No, thanks. It's not that much when I chair. It's just that I'm just a bit mesmerized by the sudden chameleoning of other comrades here. I mean, when we started, we got an impression that there was an issue in terms of communication between NSFAS and TVETs and universities. But seemingly after lunch, since things have changed, it's like there was a serious lobbying taking place. But it's fine. I think we'll leave it there.
No, the people are happy. You know, when there is no issue, there is no issue. When the people are happy, they are happy with the progress that has been registered in the sector. So we are meeting again next week, members. Tomorrow there is nothing. There is a women's parliament. So there is no sitting tomorrow, there is no committee meeting, there is no caucus. So we are only meeting again next Tuesday. Tuesday we are going to deal with the sitters. We are going to receive a presentation on the new sitter landscape from the department. And Wednesday we deal with the sitters. So I think with the TVETs, the department must do as we've said. The Association of College Principals must also do that. And I think we'll also ask the student leadership to prepare something so that we can have a holistic discussion, find out what's happening there from all the perspectives. Thank you for coming, comrades, members, the meeting is adjourned.